the Book Club for Movies, everybody. It is Thursday, October 18th. I'm Ryan Miller, and he's the head cheese himself. Matt Amberg.
Well done, sir.
Is that what you wanted when you told me to use head cheese?
No, I was really thinking about something having to do with actual head cheese, but I'll take anything I can get that puts me in a position of power.
I've never had actual head cheese. I'm not an authority.
Neither am I, and I don't really expect to have any head cheese in the near future or ever.
I've heard it's smelly.
Yeah, Limburger is smelly, and I'd rather eat that.
Okay, well, none of these apply to the movie we're going to watch this week on Book Club for... Well, okay, you're right.
Seriously.
We'll find out. On Book Club for Movies, where we watch a single movie in a week that we talk about, and several others that we then continue to talk about. But you only have to watch one. We don't want to overload you. And then you can contact us with your thoughts. That sounded telepathic. You can write them on Twitter or whatever. And this week, you can send your telepathic thoughts about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Matt, what could this movie possibly be about?
Safety with power tools. But here we go. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre is going to roll in at an hour and 23 minutes. Written by Kim Henkel and Toby Hooper. Directed by Toby Hooper. Starring Marilyn Burns, Edwin Neal, Paul Partain, Jim Sydow, and Gunnar Hansen as our hero Leatherface. Now, your Book Club for Movies synopsis for The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Long, drawn-out scream.
You should put that
no, please,
in there.
I'm sorry.
In 1973, when a group of friends driving through Texas to find out if their grandparents' graves had been desecrated, they find a lot more than they bargained for when they're confronted by a family of cannibals looking to make a new batch of chili.
Accurate.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's really no other way of saying what this movie is about.
What did you get me into this week, Matt?
I got you into one of the classic modern horror films, a movie that has inspired movies ever since.
Yeah, and I honestly did not know that. I mean, I, as any 3-month-old child on earth, has heard of the movie, the franchise, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, possibly Leatherface. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that it's basically the first.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's definitely the. It was a very unique movie when it came out. Let's put it that way.
I had honestly no idea, and can completely see that. You know, this is pre-Freddy. This is pre-Jason. This is pre-Friday. This is pre-Halloween. Even Halloween may be the nearest successor. I've done my reading. You can correct me. I'm
well
open
done.
To being corrected.
No, you're right.
But yeah, I had no idea of the seminal nature of this thing.
That's awesome. Seriously, like, this is what I wanted.
Okay,
I wanted you to find out.
You're going to be surprised by the rest of the show too, let me tell you.
Oh, I don't think so. I kind of have an idea here based on what you just said.
Okay, well, why don't we start with your history then? That's sure. My history. Yours is long and storied, although you've been careful to say not as storied as I might think.
Yeah, this is a movie that I saw it at an early age. I probably saw it when I was sub 10 years old, I'm sure.
Sure.
Again, my dad was not concerned with entertainment like this. He was pretty, like, he made it very clear that a movie is a movie. And I had family members who were involved in film. So I got a lot of understanding early that this is not real. It's a TV. But I also learned that very early on, I like being scared. Being scared is a very, like, it is a unique feeling. You do not have anything else that makes you feel the way scared does.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love feeling that. Going to a haunted house is terrifying to me. I jump at everything. When people watch me stream on Twitch.tv/ZeroHitPoints, I genuinely do jump because it scares me. So I saw this when I was fairly young. And oh, yeah, it scared the crap out of me. Like, because it looked real. You know, Freddy didn't look real. Jason didn't look real, but this looked real. Like, this was the way it was filmed. It was all handheld and stuff. And at the time, I didn't know that, but it was like, there's somebody who's watching this. This is happening. What is going to happen to the cameraman at the end? you know?
Right. Yeah.
I enjoyed the movie, and it was the second one where I found out, like, I really was able to comprehend, because I saw them really close together.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is a very different movie. It goes in a totally different direction. There is nothing serious about it. It is comedy laden. It is super weird.
Matt.
Yeah.
We will get there.
Oh, excellent. Now I'm thrilled to hear about this. Very different movies, but I saw them, you know, and that's when I kind of first understood, or I you know, it's something that dawned on me that it doesn't have to be like horror is a very fun genre that can easily be crafted into having something funny in it and being a comedy and being a drama. Like, horror is kind of the one genre that can be every genre.
Sure.
You know, there are other genres that can touch on it, but if you're a straight comedy movie and you've got horror in it, it doesn't really, it's not the same thing. It's very different, you know, but so it kind of helped introduce me to that, the sequel did. And then I never dug into a ton of the history or the making of it. I just really liked the movie. And I learned what I learned over time that the dinner scene, which we will get to, was an absolute misery for Marilyn Burns. She hated every second of it. She almost stopped acting because of it.
Not surprised.
Yeah, and because it was like 12 hours of that.
Well, this movie is also taking place at a time where, let's say, the precautions of today weren't, you know, I feel like the last time we talked about this was when we did the Hard Boiled show.
Sure.
And it's probably one of the reasons that the films of that time period and era and location, you know, Hong Kong cinema, came out so crazy, or I can't believe they did that, or how did they do that? Because a lot of times they just did it,
right,
or got as close as possible, whereas that's not an option nowadays.
Right, unless you're very, very indie and you're distributing, you're doing it yourself.
And the guy that's going to stop you is not on set that day.
Right.
Or you didn't hire him, or you're guerrilla. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
So let's start at the beginning of the movie, let's say.
Yeah, let's jump in.
Which is a crawl, actually. A narration of sorts by John Larroquette.
one of my favorite weird little things. It's like John Larroquette did the crawl.
Well, especially since it's 1973. What do you say? Four?
Yeah.
1974. Yeah, this is pre-Night Court, man.
Very pre-Night Court. He sounded exactly the same.
What was he, 14? Yeah, I know. Seriously.
He was born with that same voice. When he said mama, it sounded just like that.
But the crawl sets the stage. It gives a quick little rundown of what's happening in the area that we're going to enter very soon. And it sets up what I think you already touched on, is the fact that this movie is consciously shot in a way that, yes, like you mentioned, is real.
It's voyeuristic.
That's the word I would choose. This is rough in a deliberate, handheld way.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I absolutely agree. And I think part of that, from my understanding, is just budget. They didn't have the money for super nice cameras. So they were like, well, we're just going to make the movie and we're going to do it. They didn't have money for dollies. They didn't have money for any of that stuff. So it was a lot of, okay, we're going to film this on the best stock we can get with the best cameras we can get. Those are all handheld. So let's go.
And nobody was going to, I mean, I don't know. I didn't read up on whether or not he went to get financing or tried to get financing, but given how it went after he completed the film and couldn't find anybody to touch it for a year, I would imagine that they probably had to do it that way to some extent. You know, this thing hadn't been done. This was X-rated.
It was. Yeah. So, which, again, looking back now, as we get into it, you kind of find out that it's not, I don't think it's even close. I put an R on it just for the sake of it being a horror movie with a couple of gore shots, but it's not even like, it's not gory. But as a kid, like, again, it was the most terrifying thing in the world to me.
Yeah, so, and gore, I mean, you are the gore expert.
I wouldn't go that far.
I feel like you're talking about viscera and guts and stuff like that.
Sure.
This gets bloody, although I'm not even sure what cut I saw, actually. I know there's several cuts. Like they,
yes, there are.
I love that they were, and again, this is in this sounds silly now, and but I love that they were going for a PG rating at some point because you know PG-13 didn't exist, but still.
Did you mean to? Was that a purposeful pun?
I don't know.
The many cuts.
Oh. Yes.
All right.
But yes, it's not gory in that sense of the word. It gets bloody at the very end, especially.
There's a little bit.
Look, she's covered in blood. There's a lot of blood.
Yeah, but it's not her blood.
There's not a pool of blood. There's a lot. In fact, from what I understand, it's real blood, too. So.
Oh, it's probably pig blood. I don't know if that counts for anything. Wouldn't surprise me.
Sorry, but okay. I think the fact that it starts with that crawl that sets it up that this is something that actually happened, right? Right. This is, in fact, let's use the Fargo frame here.
All right, frame it up for me, Cohen bro.
Fargo does basically the opposite. It starts out with that thing that says, this story is true, and then gives you kind of a traditionally produced, I mean, exceptionally produced narrative film. Mm-hmm. This tells you everything is true and then gives you something that looks like it was shot by the survivor, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
But.
Okay, give me the but.
Creates a weirdness about it. Everything else is otherworldly. Like, it tells you it's true over and over and over and kind of throws the seeds in time after time. But everything is just bizarre looking. Like, the moment we start off with the kids, they're on a road trip, they're in a van. You can stop me if I skip anything. But the moment they get into town and it's that first interaction with the drunk that's shot, he's on his back, he looks like he's upside down to us, and is just going on and on about stuff. He says something about it not being what it seemed, or in fact, I kept putting myself in the theater in the 70s, and how lost must people have been? Like, how unsettled must people have been? It's still unsettling, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Ah, all right, I like it. you're not wrong. It is, like, it's very, very purposeful, and one of the things that I have multiple times is things to do with cinematography, and the fact that they were so limited in what they could do almost opened up more for them. And I think the editor, whoever edited this movie, did an incredible job putting it together, because, and we'll get to it, but there are scenes for me that I think the editing is out of this world great, which you might disagree with.
No, it's incredibly edited. And I think I'll have more to say at the ending about that. So maybe I won't respond to that just yet. But
All right. Okay. Yeah. So the two main characters are really Sally and Franklin. And their grandfather was in this cemetery that was vandalized. And it was vandalized by somebody. Who could it possibly be? Where they dug up a whole bunch of graves. There were body parts missing. And then there was this nasty viscera covered skeleton that was kind of built on top of like a mausoleum in the cemetery.
They got posed. And we get a full on, like, it shows all of that from the very outset. We get like the radio background talking about how the graves have been robbed. And then we get this grisly image and it stays on it for a while until
it's a long pan back or like a long
it is.
Thing. And, yep. But I think it's super effective because it's one of those moments where you go, this movie is not right. And it's super weird too, because there is this consistent moment of dread, because you know it's called the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You're already told that Sally is the one survivor. You already know bad things are coming, and you're just waiting and waiting for this to happen. And when it does, there is totally that moment of what, that's awful. Like, but our two main characters, that they're going out to find out if their grandfather's grave is desecrated. It's not. So they're like, great, we can go back home.
But even that, I think, is a moment, because they arrive at the town. They see that drunk. It's all completely weird.
Right.
And then they tell them where their grandpa's grave is. And then it cuts away to them back in the car. Like, I don't even remember finding out that everything was okay.
Yeah. No. Because right away, she says, yes, I looked at the grave. I saw it with my own eyes.
Well, we don't see any of it. I guess what I'm getting at is the second thing on my list, actually, is that it hands you these kind of little pieces of plot. Mm-hmm. You know, they're on a road trip. There's been some desecrations. You don't get to see the grave, like the solution, even though I guess you hear about it, which I missed. But then they're back in the car and they pick up a hitchhiker. And the hitchhiker has a camera. The movie began with, you know, the pictures of the dead stuff before the long shot with all the corpses stacked on each other. But what I find myself doing is trying to grab on to these little pieces of plot, but everything's so weird and kind of slippery around it. you're trying to grab onto something and it's not letting you, basically. And it just adds to the complete aesthetic of the film. You know, like there's nothing for you to, there's no anchor. You are just, you're uneasy. You're unbound. You don't know where to go with this thing.
And this is where to go. No. And I love that description because this is a gritty movie. It does not give you anything to work with, and it's gross and it's just nasty in like
everybody's
every respect.
Everybody's grimy. Like even not even bloody yet, just dirty.
It's just sweating. Yeah, it's just dirty. Like it's actual grit. Like nowadays when you hear gritty movie, it just means they've got an anti-hero in there that you want to root for. Like that's
Ed
gritty.
Harris is in there somewhere. Yeah,
yes, 100%. You know, it's absolutely the E to the Harris. But you're right. It doesn't give you anything.
And there are lines of dialogue thrown in there too that I want to say complete the picture, but further incomplete it maybe.
Yeah, well I mean the especially in, with the way the hitchhiker is introduced, and just the way he, like, so the way he's introduced I think immediately sets you off. You can see how he, the number one of the girls says, don't pick him up, he's weird looking. And then there's this long shot of him running towards the van, and he doesn't run like normal. Like he runs like you know, there's something.
Nobody
up with the
acts
guy.
Like normal. Like even to a certain extent, even the kids, and I call them kids, they're 1970s kids, so they're not actual kids because movies weren't made for kids yet.
No, and they had none.
They all act kind of weird. Like one of them's just reading astrology like crazy, even though that's where we get the line, there are moments that we cannot believe what is happening is really true.
Right,
but they all act kind of strange, and I don't know, maybe it's because I don't remember the 70s really well, being born in 1979.
You're so old, dude.
But yeah, nothing's normal. I mean, the best normal maybe for the film are the quiet moments, I would say, because the plot is simple. They're on a road trip, they get sidetracked and then killed. Peppered throughout all that, and it's used to atmospheric effect, are kind of nothings. Things that appear to not, like if you were trying to tighten up a plot, you might eliminate.
Sure.
You know?
And I mean, this is a whole, an hour and 23 minutes. This is a fast movie. Like yeah. In a very specific way. It is also a slow movie in a very specific way. Like it has this weird balance to it where, and I can't say it's perfectly paced because it's not. There's just this weird up and down with it, and your like those little quiet moments are exactly that. They're like, and I'm not saying they're bad lulls. They're things that make this movie what it is. And when I say it's got ups and downs, I don't mean that in a negative. It's not reductive. It is just a roller coaster of very odd things that kind of end up culminating in this massive, like just explosive finale that I just. There are lots of movies that have tried to recreate that, but this one just, it does it the right way. There's something so perfectly correct about it.
It's completely additive, and I don't know if I would even say it's poorly paced. Like, I think those moments, while they seem to be nothing, are obviously not, and are necessary. Mm-hmm. They're probably as important to the film as anything that happens in the third act, you know, or when stuff does get really moving. In fact, maybe we get to when stuff really gets moving.
Sure. Yeah, let's move forward.
So they come to a house, and that house, man, what a find. Like, I don't know, because it's already overgrown. So I imagine, I didn't look it up, but do you know the history behind the house at all?
I don't.
It's freaking perfect. Like, I don't know who found that, but...
So the house that they first go into is supposed to be Franklin and Sally's.
Oh, that's right. It is their childhood home.
Yeah, it's their childhood home. Yeah. It's where they lived. And if I remember correctly, in real life, it became a bed and breakfast restaurant, and then it closed down. And then in like 2013, it reopened, and they don't play up the connection to Texas Chainsaw at all. They're like, it's not a, they don't talk about it.
In any event, the house is amazing looking from the outset.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take long before they find, it's a separate house, right? That's.
Yes.
Yes. They find a, I forget how they get there, but.
One of the, Pam and one of the guys, and I can't remember what his name is, tell him, like, we want to go swimming. Isn't there a swimming hole
right
around here?
Okay.
Franklin tells him that there's a take the path. It'll go down to the swimming hole. They walk down the path and find the swimming hole's dry, but then they hear a generator running. And so these two go to investigate the generator. When they get to the generator, Pam it stays outside. She doesn't like, they bang on the door. They try to get somebody to come and answer. Nobody comes to answer. Pam sits down and the guy goes into the house and calls around for a little bit. And the way this is shot, I, by the way, is just so good. It is this narrow hallway with a staircase, and it looks right down into this open door where you can see a whole bunch of skulls, like animal skulls on the wall, on a wall painted red. Okay. And it's so small, it's so claustrophobic that even when he's walking through it, he doesn't have a ton of space to move around. Like, it's just not a wide hallway. And it's such an interesting perspective because it goes down this small hallway into this door that's much wider. It's a two-door wide. And you just know, you just know this is not going to go well. And you could, he walks down the hallway because he's hearing pig screams. Like, he's hearing a pig making noise.
Or some weird kind of, not like screams, like not like runaway screams, like
right.
Just weird sounds, like they, almost like a gob, like a turkey gobble or something.
He's making hog sounds. He's making pig sounds. That's what he's actually doing.
Okay.
If you think about it, pig noises that he works in meat, it makes a little more sense.
Sure. It makes a ton of sense that that's all this movie does.
Yeah, no, it does. So he hears the pig noises, walks down, and when he gets down to the hallway, that's when our hero Leatherface shows up, and he looks at and just immediately clocks him over the head with a meat, like a mallet, like a meat hammer, just a giant sled.
But immediately, like the out of nowhere-ness of this first kill is jarring in the extreme. And then he hits him with the hammer once, the body goes into convulsions, and he drags the body into that room you mentioned and shuts the door. That's it.
And the door, it is one of the best moments. Like, that is an iconic moment where he just slams that door shut and you just, like, that's it. You know, you're not seeing him again. He's gone. And the next time you do see him, you really only see like him from one direction. And that's because he's been strong. Yeah.
Sure.
He's been stretched out and he's going to be decorated.
And decoration.
Yes, he's going to be decoration. That's true. That's better.
As you
might
imagine.
He's going to be chilly.
But yeah, that freaking immediate first kill, it's harrowing.
Not only is it jarring, it is again one of those things where this movie was made so early that there was so much ADR they could not do that's another part of the unsettling thing is the sound effects they do use. And then when they're quiet, it is awful. The sound that thing makes when he hits the head, it's not like now where you would hear a skull shatter. It's just a thump, and it's this wretched just clunk, and he goes down, and then the convulsions is crazy. And it's another moment though where when you finally see Leatherface and you see that the mask is just, you can tell his face isn't right, and he's got this bright yellow apron on, he's got the tie underneath it, like he's dressed, he's ready to be a professional, like he's gonna go work at the meat factory at the slaughterhouse, no problem, except the slaughterhouse is his actual kitchen.
Okay, since we're getting into Leatherface.
I think it's interesting,
and you're probably half joking, our hero Leatherface, but I think the character of Leatherface is in the arc and the iconic journey of Leatherface is fascinating in a way because, especially me, having no experience with this, having heard, you think you put Leatherface, again, very much closer to Michael Myers. You know, but he's in the pantheon. You think of Jason
sure.
and Freddy and
sure.
all that stuff.
He's one of those well-known killers.
He's a monolith. I'll use that word again.
Sure.
He's not in this movie.
No.
Like, yes, he's iconographic, I guess. that the costume and everything about him is amazing. But, and especially as the movie goes on, he's not that monolith yet. Like, he's, number one, he doesn't leave the house. They come to him for at least the first, was it 3 kills or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't leave. Like, you even get the feeling that he maybe never would have left, at least until the last half of the movie. He maybe never would have left if they hadn't gone into his home type thing.
Sure, sure. And I mean, you do get the moment. There is a moment early on where the old man flat out tells him. And I think this is funny because it is something that Cabin in the Woods straight up calls out. And it was totally taken from this movie. He's the harbinger of death. He flat out tells them, don't go to other people's property.
That's true. Actually, he did tell them not to go.
He straight up says, do not go. Don't do that. Don't go onto other people. If they had stayed at the house, nothing would have happened. Never. I don't think, because, and the funny thing is like Franklin makes a huge, huge deal out of the hitchhiker following them.
Yeah.
And there's at no point, like you quickly kind of come to the conclusion, and maybe you didn't come to this conclusion, but I have always thought that Franklin is a selfish character. He is not like he to me, he is a, I'm going to feel sorry for my, and make everybody feel sorry for me. And that's what he does throughout the whole movie. He's not.
Nah,
that's,
I didn't really get that feeling.
That's fair. I think you're wrong, but yeah, whatever.
I love the moment where he is concerned about the hitchhiker, because this is after we've already seen a couple grisly murders.
Right.
And he's sitting there hand wringing about the hitchhiker, and you're like, dude, hitchhiker's not the problem,
right?
But they don't know yet. It's him and Sally still, I think, is it, right? And they're wondering where everybody else, or there might still be a third. I can't remember the order.
No, it's Sally at the end when he's complaining about the hitchhiker. That's before they've gone to, the two have gone to the house or gone to the swimming hole. Everybody's still at the rest of them, I think, are still at the house.
No, somebody's died already. That's what makes his hand ringing interesting to me. But anyways, yes, for the timing doesn't matter at this point.
Yeah, no. So after we've gotten the first kill, okay, we don't see what's done with him. He's just dragged away. And at that point, that's when Pam, she comes into the house. She starts walking down the hallway, and the door has now been opened back up. And she walks into Leatherface. She sees him, and she gets out of the house, and she's running, and he grabs her. And we see the struggle, and it's, again, the way it's shot is so terrifying and unsettling. When it gets to, he goes into the room, and there's a meat hook, and you see exactly what's going to happen, and he lifts her up, and she takes that hook right into her back, and you see her go up, you see her come down on the hook, Leatherface turns around. That's where you see where the boyfriend was, because he's now in front of, Leatherface is standing in front of him. He walks away, and when he walks away, you get the brief look at her being hung up on the meat hook, and you can't see anything. There's no hook coming out of her body. She is just stuck there, and that hook is somewhere inside of her.
Sure.
And that's terrifying.
Yeah, no, it's pretty bad. I think my actual note there was, oh, the hook. Oh, no, this is getting bad. So it was.
And I should actually mention this before she gets attacked. She starts walking around the house, and she falls into a room filled with bones, and she's looking around. And that is one of those moments of editing that I think is just, I actually have notes about it, that the editing as she's looking through the house, falling into the bones, is incredible.
Is it because the editing extends it by like 20 minutes, it seems like?
Yeah, yeah.
Where the audience has to be yelling, you know, like, what are you doing? Get out of there, or something like that.
Right.
Like, she revels in all that stuff to the point where you're like, what are you still doing there, type thing.
Yeah, and it's great. Because what they do is they flip through all the things that she's looking at, and they take a minute on them, and she starts looking around, and she's realizing more and more that the bones may not just be animal bones. And that's, you know, anything's possible with Leatherface. So she sees Leatherface, tries to run, doesn't get out,
she
gets
does.
Hooked. Mm. We find out that the boyfriend's dead. We know this now. And now we have to move forward, because now other people must make their way into the house.
Well, the movie's ratcheting itself up. And
very.
Ratchets and ratchets and ratchets. I don't honestly have much more until the end. So if you have something before...
No, let's skip right down to it. Let's go.
So everybody's pretty dead.
Yep.
Except for Sally.
Oh, and skipping over... Are you with Franklin still?
No, Franklin's dead. That's what okay. I'm saying. They get to the house. They get chased. Franklin gets chainsawed. So, Sally escapes.
So I wanna just talk about the okay. Franklin thing, because I think out of the entire movie, this is the quote unquote grossest part, and it's the part that has the most blood, because Franklin is in a wheelchair and Leatherface just charges at him and starts jamming the chainsaw into him. You never see the chainsaw enter his body. You never see anything other than blood spurting out. And I just want to point this out because people have a misconception about this movie and thinking it is, you know, it is people's hands coming off and seeing heads explode. And it's not. It is a very restrained, in my opinion, horror movie. It's a very restrained, violent movie that is less violent than you think it is in terms of the actual visuals.
In terms of what's actually on screen, when you sit down and think about it and watch it and pay attention, yes.
Yeah.
I would say people are justified in whatever stuff they add to it because of how this film suggests it.
And that's I think, the part that people go back to, and they again, people ascribe more to this, I think, than there is, unless you are actually thinking about if that were to happen.
Yeah, no, the movie is completely effective in not showing you the worst and yet somehow still showing you the worst.
Right. No, you know? Absolutely. I love it.
So yes, Franklin is dead. Sally runs away. There's actually a pretty tense chase sequence that I enjoyed, but
yeah,
she does get caught eventually. And this is where the film comes together in a way, because going back to the character of Leatherface, he is not all together. He is very worried about some of the stuff that has happened already. Like, there's a couple shots of him, you know, just head in his hands, you know. And why that begins to make sense is because the larger family comes into the picture. We find out the old man at the gas station is his father, right? Yeah. And there's the hitchhiker was the brother, and he's still in the picture. And soon enough, we realize there's a grandfather who is basically a corpse, and you think is just a corpse for the entirety of his time on screen, until they get her in the chair. You find out that the barbecue is cannibalistic, and they sit her down at the dinner table and they give grandpa the honor of doing her in. I'm guessing this is the scene you were talking about that must have been hell for Marilyn Burns, because they bend her over this pan and they give grandpa the hammer, and he's trying to hit her, but he can't hold on to the hammer, but he actually isn't a corpse. And then he's sucking on her finger or something.
Well, and then Leatherface, they cut her finger so that because the theory here is that he's going to suck on the finger, get the blood, and that's going to kind of, okay, yeah, no. It's going to wake him up a little bit so he has a little more power to bring the hammer down.
Oh, okay. Basically, what happens is that this movie, after over an hour of just being the weirdest and giving you nothing to hold on to, the movie itself then, and this is the editing part I was going to mention, basically appears to buckle under its own weight. And purposefully so, and effectively so. But this is where just you're getting, you know, like close-ups on stuff you don't even know what it is, or on her face so you can't see anything else that's going on. You just get her reactions, you get other stuff, and it's coming so fast and furious that this thing is just, it's not a mess. That's the first word that comes to mind for a lot of moments in this movie, but
it's like a purposeful mess.
It is, but it's a crescendo, I guess. It's
sure.
It's perfect for the movie.
It's a third act.
It's it's even more than that, I'd say.
Sure. All right. So yeah, it is the scene at the dinner table, not when she's bent over actually. It's the scene where she's tied up because she was covered in blood. She was tied up. She had to scream over and over and over again.
Tied up to an armchair.
Yeah.
A chair where the armrests were arms.
Yeah. Yeah.
The lamp over the table being a headlamp.
Sure. Yep.
A head with a light in it.
This movie is not without its macabre humor, all right? So Grandpa's trying to bash her over the head, and this is the moment where they're so focused on Grandpa and his whether or not he can hit her. She finally has a moment to escape, and escape she does. Runs down the hallway, and for a second time, dives out a window.
And she escapes. The only person that goes after her is the hitchhiker, and they run out into the street, and hitchhiker gets hit by a semi, who then kind of rescues her, but then she gets away in the back of another car that's passing by.
Yeah, and Leatherface does this awesome dance.
That's right. That is the literal end of the movie, is him pursuing her with the chainsaw, and her getting away, and him just living it up in the middle of the road.
Swinging like it, letting his frustration out. And prior to all that, one of my favorite moments is actually, I love that moment where Sally she runs towards the semi-truck that had killed the brother. Leatherface is on her tail. She tries to get into the car. She gets pulled in. They close the door. And then for some reason, she goes out the other door instead of just letting him drive. I've never understood that. The chainsaw is not going to get through that metal. You're fine. We can see it just scratching it. Why are you getting out of the car?
There's a couple things. Far less than I think other horror movies and other stuff. There's a couple moments. Also, why doesn't anybody but the hitchhiker? I guess Leatherface eventually does start chasing her, but where's the father? And I don't know. This movie gets away with it more than any other movie because everything else, motivations and people included, are just bizarre, right?
Well, sure. I mean, the father had to stay back and take care of Grandpa. And then Leatherface and the brother, or Leatherface and the hitchhiker, they chase together. Like, he's right behind the hitchhiker.
No, he's not right behind her. They get all the way down the road. In fact, I want to say he shows up when they've let you forget about him a little bit.
I think you're wrong. I think he shows up in that chase. He's just further behind. But in any case...
No, you are correct. He's further behind than he should be. Like, he stayed in the house for a while for whatever reason.
Well, he had to go get his chainsaw.
Okay.
No, seriously. He was at the dinner table.
No, that's but yes.
He had to grab the chainsaw. It's a Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which, by the way, is funny because he only uses it like for one. He kills Franklin with it. Everything should be called the Texas Hammer Massacre. In any case,
doesn't sound as good.
So the truck driver and Sally jump out of the truck, and they're running past the truck. Leatherface comes around, and the truck driver turns around and just chucks a friggin' wrench into his face and drops the chainsaw right on his leg and gives himself a nice big cut. And that's when this is again another one of those weird things. So the truck driver keeps running. Sally gets into the back of a pickup truck. Truck driver's still running. A pickup truck driver, he's gone. Or the semi-truck driver.
I love that she doesn't get away with the semi-truck driver. Yeah.
And he just keeps going. So like
we don't even know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then as they're driving away, Leatherface does his dance of frustration. Now, I want to go back to the thing about Leatherface holding his head in his hands, being very worried. I have always, and I think this gets more confirmed in 2, even though 2 is completely and utterly ridiculous and doesn't really have much of a connection in reality to the first one, but whatever. He comes off in this very, like, childlike manner that this is how he was raised, but he's just not sure if it's the right thing. Like he's got the brain of a child.
Well, is he referred to as a retard in this movie?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I would believe not, but that's the insinuation. Like he's mentally handicapped.
Sure.
He's not the monolith. Again, he is
right. No, he was taught.
Well, and that's why the end, I think, is more impactful, is because it becomes about the family. This movie was never about Leatherface by himself.
No.
It becomes about that house, that family. And even though those final moments, we see just her just laughing maniacally because she's escaped finally, mm-hmm. and we see Leatherface just dancing around. It's such a perfect encapsulation. It's we see the entire rest of the movie in that dance and in Sally's face. It's a really perfect ending, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the happiest ending possible for either of them. And and of course, the laughing and smiling and everything, I think, goes back to it's that Zodiac thing where she says, until you're facing the fear, you won't know how to laugh at it and deal with it or something. She says something about Zodiac things.
Wait, did she in the movie they mention that?
Yeah, yeah. When she reads two different Zodiac things.
Oh, I can't. Me, I'm thinking Zodiac Killer. I don't know why.
Oh, yes.
The
no.
astrology stuff. I get you. Sure.
Sorry.
No, okay.
I should have said astrology.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because there was a point where immediately in a movie when somebody reads astrology, you're like, okay, they're the crazy one. Astrology is complete bunk and blah, blah, blah. Ooh, atmosphere, whatever. In this movie, when they read it, you're like, that's the most normal thing in this movie right now, like amongst the hitchhiker
sure.
and the way it's filmed and all this stuff. And then she starts reading the Zodiac and you're like, okay, maybe I can grab onto this as something that's, you know, so that's actually really interesting that that would be a callback to the end. That's just makes it even better. I mean, this thing holds up to that kind of scrutiny. And I pulled a couple just thoughts from different people, different reviewers. There's tons and tons of literature on this thing. I'm sorry, unless you have something else about
it. No.
Okay. The first is from Wes Craven himself. After seeing it, he recalled wondering what kind of Mansonite crazoid could have created such a thing. Quote, unquote.
Yep.
But then the other one is from this dude, Christopher Sherritt, who, I don't know, does that ring a bell to you at all? I don't know him.
No.
But his quote, and I think he might have been a book writer on this thing, but the one I pulled is that Hooper's apocalyptic landscape is a desert wasteland of disillusion where once vibrant myth is desiccated, talking about the myth of America, you know, the American dream, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The ideas and iconography of Cooper, Bret Hart, and Francis Parkman are now transmogrified into yards of dying cattle, abandoned gasoline stations, defiled graveyards, crumbling mansions, and a ramshackle farmhouse of psychotic killers. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre is recognizable as a statement about the dead end of American experience.
Yes.
Fantastic.
I agree with everything he said. That's wonderful.
And it's completely support. Like, some people make arguments about films, and I love those arguments because that's, I mean, it's not my bread and butter because I make no bread and or butter from it. But that's the stuff it's film school, right? I love talking about that thing, things that don't exist, talking about the zeitgeist, stuff like that.
Sure.
That is supportable in this film like nothing else. Like this is the death of the American dream in a way, you know, like looking at that landscape and thinking about it like it's the complete perverted Norman Rockwell type thing, you know?
Absolutely. Like they are like, I would love to see the Norman Rockwell painting of their family.
Oh, that, you know? Dinner table, that family at the dinner table. Oh,
sure.
You're not kidding. That has to already be out there. In fact,
I'm sure. But if it's gotta be not a joke, you know, it has to be done just like Rockwell.
Yep. But the movie's already perfect. So what do you do?
That's fair. Last couple of things that I like to mention about the movie. Did you happen to realize that he is, of course, wearing Franklin's face?
Oh, is that Franklin's face?
Yeah, that's Franklin's face, which is part of the reason Sally loses it, because he's wearing Franklin's face.
Oh, that's weird, because he uses it. He becomes the mom at the dinner table. Like, he's wearing a wig and
it's
makeup.
It's Franklin's face.
On Franklin's face.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's Franklin's hair, actually, I think.
Is it also?
Yeah.
I thought it was gray hair.
Maybe. But he had like a little curly, I don't know, but it's Franklin's face.
Okay, Franklin's face.
So that is going to be, oh, did you have more?
Giving it more than one star seems weird. That doesn't leave you very much room.
Well, we'll see what we can do.
I feel like two, that's, okay, tell you what, 3 stars.
Out of 2.
Okay, all right. So if you've got thoughts on Texas Chainsaw Massacre, you can try podcast at bookclubformovies.com. It's, again, coming from where I came, now standing where I stand, it's a singular movie. It is one of the first. You can see all the ones that came after in it. And I think this still might be the best. Like this actually, it's hard for me to say it holds up. I think it holds up, but that's a qualified statement coming from me.
You know what? You coming into the movie not having seen it, but having seen so much that came from it, I think you have a valid opinion on that.
Well, and I would say it's most certainly in my top 10 horror movies.
Ah, that's
awesome. Of all time, for sure. It's Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
It's unsettling, right? Like now you understand.
My opinion on it is unsettling.
I am so happy.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that you found. You found the quality in the movie that I was hoping you'd find, and you'd see how good this was.
So let's ruin it and disagree about some things, I'm sure.
Sure, let's go.
Did you watch some other stuff this week?
I did. I've got three movies.
Okay.
I'm going to skip one of them, though.
I'll try to combine these all into something, I'm sure. I should have expected we would have gone that long on Texas Chainsaw. I did watch Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2.
Okay.
The best I can say, and you've already talked a fair amount about it, and I think maybe have explained a little bit about what happened.
Yeah. This is called a cash grab.
It is. I'm sure people have found value in that somewhat. I myself have found value in cash grabs from time to time.
Oh, sure. Fast and Furious.
I don't know if I can do that with this one. Like, it's the best I could say about it was, and I actually didn't get as much into this as I wanted to, but the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a perfect 70s movie in a way. You know, there's talk of Vietnam and Watergate and all this stuff and the disillusionment of America, not just the death of the American dream, and how that movie fits into that section of cinema quite perfectly.
Yeah.
Part two might fit into 80s cinema in that way.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Okay. I could give it that, but I just probably hated everything else about it. It didn't land, like, not in a campy or a culty way.
Oh, man.
No.
I like it.
Dennis Hopper, none of it makes sense. Motivations are all stupid.
Yes.
And they haven't created a world. I mean, they've created a world that's insane, but not in the way the first movie did.
I love this movie. It is not, like, by far, it is not Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This is definitely a movie that was a cash grab. Toby Hooper didn't want to do it, but he had to.
I'm surprised he did. Like, that was the one thing I was like, oh, well, he's directing it again. I guess maybe something.
It was a total requirement so that he could go direct something else. And I don't remember. I don't remember
really?
What it was. Oh. Yeah. Well, or it was his contractual.
He got them.
It was contractual. Yeah, he got boned.
No, he got them. Like, woo-hoo, pulled one over on him.
Oh, suckers.
Whatever he got to do. Like,
I love Dennis Hopper in this movie because it's like, all right, you're a reputable actor. Well, you were a reputable actor. Let me guess. But you're going to be Bowser in Super Mario Brothers.
But even then, because Dennis Hopper was, I mean, he's not too far removed from being a force. Like, Dennis Hopper was kind of the Nick Cage of his time. Like, he had the crazy about him.
Sure.
And here it's just, it's wasted in a way. But then it's also, it's enveloped in stuff that appears to make sense. It's dumb. It's stupid. I don't even want to.
I like that movie. Chop Top.
I'm not surprised people like it. I watched the reboot, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, 2003, Jessica Biel.
Sure. Arlie Ermey.
Yes. Wait. Yes. Yes. That's when sorry. Much of it's a blur. I watched, I guess we'll get into the other ones I watched, but I watched four movies between yesterday and even today. I think I finished one.
I think so, you've put a lot of effort into this.
I don't know why, honestly.
Yeah.
The reboot is reminiscent. It starts with the crawl. I want to say it might even be John Larroquette again.
I think it was, okay. Actually. He had nothing to do after Night Court.
It gets a little too CG in a way that makes the movie unsettling. So I could kind of give it that sometimes. Like, it's there are really lots of low angles, and it's not called a skybox when it's not a video game, but the sky looks a little weird and unsettling from time to time. The story is kind of serviceable until it isn't. Like, this movie goes downhill super fast. Like, at the beginning where you can kind of see some of it, even though it's not as good. Like, the first kill, which is Eric Balfour for... So
yes, it was.
Might be worth tuning into. I don't know. I've never seen a movie I liked him in. I've seen an Eric Andre show I liked him in, and that was about it.
Well, and Eric Andre makes people likable. So.
But he's the first kill in this movie. And they approximate it pretty well, except it's surrounded by more traditional to bad horror fare.
Sure.
So it loses pretty much everything.
Yeah.
It basically tries to make peace with what Texas Chainsaw has become and what Leatherface has become, and also what that first movie was, which are two completely different things.
Yep.
Leatherface is a monolith by this point. He's lost all of the... 99% of the pretense, 99% of the hand wringing, you know, of the actual depth to his character. And yeah, I'm going to talk about the depth of Leatherface's character.
You know what? Horror heroes, quote unquote, are often very tragic characters.
And Leatherface might be at the top of that list, actually.
It's possible, yeah.
But it's lost here. And this is before I knew it was produced by Michael Bay. So,
oh yeah, I forgot he did a whole bunch of like a string of horror movies with Platinum Dunes or something.
Yes, Platinum Dunes is the name of his company, and
Yeah.
Because there was a sequel to this reboot that made gobs of money, in fact.
Ugh.
Called The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Beginning. And it's just a beginning to this reboot.
Yeah.
It does focus on Arlie Ermey, so credit where credit's due. Like, that dude's cool. And yeah, he might carry this movie. He doesn't carry it anywhere good. It's a sequel prequel to the movie I just said I didn't like anyways.
I will tell you that the reboots I do not enjoy them.
They're not enjoyable.
No, and you know, it's like one of my big bugaboos with frickin' movies nowadays is I hate CGI for gore. I just hate it. It looks like crap. It never looks good. Blood in CGI is always trash.
CGI blood is stupid, man. Never,
it is.
Ever. I mean,
it doesn't work ever.
Yeah, no.
It always looks like you are making an indie movie because you have Adobe Lightroom, or what is it? Adobe Fireworks.
It's probably Lightroom. No, you're right.
Yeah, I don't
it's,
know.
It's probably Acrobat is what they're using.
They're using Adobe Acrobat to make the blood. And I mean, that's just, you know.
Yeah, but this one especially, though, because it does, like, it dropped, whereas the first reboot, I didn't figure out was Michael Bay right away. This one, you figure out it's Michael Bay right away. Like, not only would it be a stupid idea to base a movie on the origin of Leatherface, but what if you pretended to do that and then still didn't? That's this movie, and it looks like a Michael Bay movie. Like, it's the high contrast is here, the low angles, the stupid movement. It's all
the
here,
stupid
and it's
movement.
All stupid. But if I could end on an up note somehow,
sure.
There was another movie, and I've skipped a bunch. There was a Texas Chainsaw: The Next Generation. Is that actually what it's called?
Yeah,
with Matthew McConaughey and
Renee
Zellweger. Yeah, I skipped some movies. We'll put it that way. I did not skip Texas Chainsaw 3D.
I did not see that one.
You might want to see it.
All right. I like the sound of that.
And this was the one, knowing, because I kind of handpicked some ones, and I didn't know what I was in for still, not from first to last. But with this one, I thought I knew most of all what it was, because it was called Texas Chainsaw 3D.
Yeah, you think, yeah, it makes sense.
But I was weirdly surprised. Number one, it pretends like all the other ones didn't happen. This takes place directly after the first movie.
Okay.
Uses footage from the first movie.
Okay.
Takes some liberties pretty quickly.
Sure.
There is way more family than you saw in the first movie. The cops pull up on the house, and it's kind of a siege type thing, and the dad comes out, played by somebody different, but still. And they basically demand Leatherface. They're like, bring him out. They don't call him Leatherface. My gosh. That's the other thing I hated about Texas Chainsaw 2. He just goes around calling him Leatherface the whole time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In 2, their last name is Sawyer. Of course it is.
Well, they give everybody names. Sorry. Don't watch part 2. Or if you're mad, watch part 2.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have even brought it up with this thing, because this is an actual sequel to the first movie. And I think ends up being a weird one by some measure, because yes, it does. It adds a whole family. It adds the cop coming up. It adds a town, because then the mob shows up and is like, get the Sawyers out of here. And I'm like, none of these people existed in the first movie. Like, we're taking some leaps pretty quick here.
Okay.
But then it becomes what I thought it was going to be. The stars are Alexandretta. Sorry, no.
Alexandretta. I should have known.
Daddario. She's been in some stuff. She was in the Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief.
Sure.
And she has a friend who's... My main issue with this movie, and their sexuality exists in all of the movies. It exists in the first movie.
Sure.
Here it breaks the objectification barrier, in my estimation. In fact, I would almost say don't see this movie based on that alone.
Okay.
But and there's no nudity or anything. But
you started strongly, and then you went downhill with this.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. Like my note, I'll skip to the ending. I'm sorry. My note is that it does the interesting thing of introducing Leatherface to the real world from the start. Like, the cops show up, and everything that was weird about the first movie is seen as weird by the rest of this movie, right?
Okay.
So it does the thing where it introduces all of that weirdness into kind of a normal world.
Sure.
And you get to see policemen with guns. Like, because the whole time you watch the first Texas Chainsaw, and part of the tension there between the audience is that, number one, this is a universe. Like I said, this is a weird universe. This isn't the real world. And number two, where's the cop? You know, like, if a cop just came with a gun, he could end all of this in a minute, right? So you get a little bit of the wish fulfillment with Texas Chainsaw 3D, and that movie takes place in the real world. You know, the story on its face is that Alexandretta is a Sawyer who was given up for adoption, that then finds her roots, and Leatherface was kept in a... Did you see this?
No, I remember the story, though. Okay. I remember the plot now.
Yeah, it's...
You can keep going. I just remember it.
It is, honestly, this is saying very little considering what we just said about all the rest. It's the most interesting premise and probably execution of any of these other sequels or franchise related movies that we talked about, which, sure, I think is another interesting act. In fact, I'm done with Texas Chainsaw 3D. Clumsy, somehow it pulls off a tiny bit of something. You should probably see it for sure.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
I think what's most interesting about the entire franchise after all of these movies, I think it's interesting that this franchise could not survive jumping the shark like every other horror franchise that followed. Freddy has a billion, like, not reboots. It has one reboot. It has a billion sequels. Jason has a billion sequels. Freaking, what's the other one?
Halloween.
All the rest of them have a billion sequels, not Police. Reboots. This just has a bunch of weird and stupid reboots until this thing. I think that's pretty telling about the first movie most of all, but...
Well, this is something that I kind of didn't bring up earlier, but I'll tack it on now. I talked about how the first movie was actually gritty. The remakes, the redos, the reboots, that is the epitome of the attempt to make a movie gritty. These movies are not grit. There's no grit to them.
Okay, I mean, Texas Chainsaw isn't going to change your mind. I did have a note that there's a lot of practical effects in it, and I think that the digital effects are used in a complementary fashion and not an overwhelming fashion.
All right, that's cool.
So I think it's also probably the goriest of any of the other ones.
Well,
I
that
saw.
Now we're
so,
talking. Give me
yeah,
that.
I mean,
yeah.
But yeah.
All right.
I can stop. I'm sorry. This show's gonna be like an app, 3 hours long.
I hope not.
You do it. You go. No.
Sure. I can do this next week. I don't care.
Well, it's up to you. Okay. If you feel by now saying your movies that we're not going to give them their due, which is what I'm most concerned about, I'm fine to stay here and do that. I don't want to do it if you're not going to be able to do what you want to do with what you got. Let's put that
one. I actually, you know what? This will be fine. I got one that'll take a minute and two that'll take no time. Well, okay. One that'll take no time.
All right.
Okay, so we went to the theater this weekend and we checked out Bad Times at the El Royale. 2 hours and 21 minutes, written and directed by Drew Goddard, starring Jeff Bridges, Cynthia Erivo, Dakota Johnson, Jon Hamm, and Chris Hemsworth.
Wow. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how I haven't heard about this thing.
You have not heard about it. Okay. This is a movie that it is very much a... Hateful Eight. It's a on some level it's like a Reservoir Dogs thing, where it is a bunch of people come together in one spot by accident in some cases, and all of it goes to hell for everybody.
Wow, I have not heard one thing about this somehow.
This is I think you should check this out. I think you will.
I'm looking at the stuff online now, I can't believe. But I'm gonna watch this.
All right.
Do you want to wait until I have, so we don't talk about it twice? Two birds. I don't know. What do you? I'm gonna watch this.
I would love to, because I have some opinions on this, and I would love to see how you feel about that. If we end up on the same page, great movie in certain aspects, and I, like I said, like cast is great. I would love to talk more about this. Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine. Other thing, I'll this could really fast. Cure for Wellness. 2 hours, 26 minutes, written by Justin Haythe, directed by Gore Verbinski, stars Dane DeHaan, Jason Isaacs, and Mia Goth. This is a movie that's 2 hours and 26 minutes.
You know, a lot of long ones. I'll have you know, not one Texas Chainsaw goes over an hour 36 or something like that.
Yeah. This was a movie that went on for 2 hours and 26 minutes, okay. Has a beautiful look to it, wonderful look to it. I can totally see why people saw this and went, Gore Verbinski should direct Bioshock. Absolutely correct. Totally agreed. This one is kind of fascinating. It's about a Wall Street guy who is told to go to this wellness center in the Swiss Alps to get the CEO to come home because he has to sign paperwork so that they can complete a giant merger. And he leaves like the modern day and ends up in this like this wellness center and village that feel like they came out of like the early 20th century, like maybe even like just old. And you get this long story about where the wellness center comes from and that there's this spring that helps water or that does something. The water is got magical properties. They're not magical. They're just unique properties. You go through this and find out that you can kind of figure this out early. A couple of the characters, like all the people that work there, the main, like the daughter or the young girl, and then the main doctor are all like doing these drops in their mouths, and you see them and nobody else has them. And so you go, okay, well that's, you know, obviously it's keeping them young and that's what it is. It's a fountain of youth thing, except the water has to be purified in some way. So he uses humans and he's basically drugging them. And then he uses them as like filters, and they get like a couple of drops of this stuff out of every human.
Where does the filtered water come out of the human?
I feel like it comes out of their back or something. I don't remember. They might have it might be like an IV thing. I honestly don't remember.
Spigot.
The movie was just so, like, it had these moments of this could be really good, and it just wasn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's just like story-wise, fun story, interesting story. It just was not good. It was very, like, they could have done this faster in some way.
Which is also Gore Verbinski. Like, I feel like when he tries to do, it can be hit or miss. Okay.
He's hit or miss. Pirates is good. The Ring is really good.
Well, no, but like his action fare is good. But I feel like when he tries to do something serious is when he gets into trouble sometimes. Like, was it The Weatherman?
Oh, The Weatherman, yeah.
I think that's good. Like he,
great, I love that. That's
the one
Nick
that
Cage.
Kind of made me a believer. But yeah, then.
Well, and I think he did a great job with The Ring.
Is that where he started? Okay, right.
Yeah. I don't know if that's where he started. It's just where I remember him from that, and I really like that movie.
That's true. Freaking Rango. Yeah.
So
Lone
we've got,
Ranger, that's where it all went wrong.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
that was bad. Okay. We are at the end of the show. We have got to tell people what the book club for movie selection for the week is.
Oh, man. Okay, perfect. Yes, because this needed a conversation, so I waited to say anything, and now I'm regretting it because we've had so many conversations. I mentioned it to you when you were on the air. I feel like if you were into it, you would have said something or remembered. I feel like it's a scary proposition, might be why. Do you want to do the thing?
Ooh.
See, yeah, this is kind of what
I don't know, because like I do love The Thing, but there are so many other movies that you haven't seen yet that I kind of also want to watch. We can do The Thing. I guess I was thinking,
no,
more,
you don't love it.
I was more thinking along the lines of doing
I know you gave me that list too. I should have maybe looked at the list.
The Dead trilogy.
Well, that's our finale, right? Spoiler alert.
Oh, is that what you want to do for the finale? Oh, I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah, I was expecting we do that for... I mean, it might be the first weekend of November because we started late, but I think, yeah, for our finale show, Octoberween finale, we're doing the Dead trilogy
all in one
show.
That's good. We'll do that. No, we could do The Thing. The Thing is good.
No, do what... I mean, you're really going to hate this. I'm going to unsell you on it, so maybe this is what you need. I'm probably going to watch the remake of that too.
Yeah, okay, let's not do that.
Say why it's bad.
Okay, I'm gonna give you a couple of options here.
Okay,
we got The Omen.
Omen.
Evil Dead 2. Or you know, let's bring it to a different kind of horror. Get Out.
The Omen, the 1976.
Correct.
Omen, or.
Yes. No, not a new one. I don't know if there is a new one, but
I
1976.
Feel like there is, but...
Well, let's do The Omen. All right. All right. Our book club for movie selection next week will be the classic tale, The Omen. So get your devil children ready to go, because they're the worst.
Oh, wait, is this... Oh, man. I feel like I'm going to see a lot of things that have been referenced elsewhere, and I had no idea.
You absolutely, especially from The Simpsons.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, there will be a number of things in here that you'll go, oh, that's The Simpsons.
Oh,
that's The Simpsons. Yeah.
That's Book Club for Movies, everybody. Tune in next week for that, apparently, and or on Tuesdays for video game related talk.
Okay.
Right? Podcasts at Zero Hit Points and or bookclubformovies.com.
Yes, those are them.
Fair enough.
Go and do stuff. We're going to leave now.
Spend most every day in a sidewalk cafe, drinking coffee, watching women walking by. The color of their hair, not the reason that I stare, but I always was a fool for a blind. Boo-ba-boo-ba-da, boo-ba-da.